the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 239 for Monday, January 25th, 2010.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton here in Durham, New Hampshire. At the beginning, you heard
John F. Braun here in Fairfield, very wet Fairfield, Connecticut. And I think we got this this bout of very severe weather from I think it was something that came from California a little while ago, and it just kind of traveled across the U.S. and just walloped us. I don't know about you, man, but I had a triple whammy. We had a flash flood alert, a flood, just a coastal flood warning, and a high wind warning. It was pretty brutal this afternoon.
Huh. I don't know.
A lot of power outages and stuff. My lights were flickering this morning.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty bad, man. It was unusual weather. So I don't know about the climate change deniers, but I don't know, man. I don't remember something like this in recent memory this time of year. And it was like 50 degrees. So
yeah, it was 50 today here. Yeah.
Anyways, enough about the weather. You probably got a little water too. So
yeah, same deal. Just rain. I mean, it was pretty mild all day. I mean, we didn't have winds or, you know, any of that crazy stuff. So
yeah, and we were looking. We were debugging a little networking issue beforehand, and my cable modem is up there as far as the signal strength is marginal. I think the lines are just all soaked. So anyways, enough of that.
Could be. All right, so
what do we got, Dave?
We have, as I started prepping the show today, you know, I actually made it through all the comments this week and queued up the ones that made sense to queue up for the show. You folks know we don't queue up everything, but we try to get back to everybody in one way or another. But I queued up, you know, all the stuff that made sense to queue up, and I looked, and we had, you know, about two shows worth of tips, two shows worth of follow-up, and like four shows worth of questions. It's like, well, the heck are we supposed to do with this? So what we decided to do for this show was to do all follow-ups from previous shows. But don't think for a second that means we're just going to sit and rehash things we've already talked about. Most, if not all, of these follow-ups, John, have tips of their own in them. So, you know, it's that kind of those aha moments that are tucked into the corners there that you don't even see them coming. And then, boom, there they are. But first, we should at least mention later this week is what could perhaps be one of the biggest Apple announcements in recent years, right? Perhaps the biggest Apple announcement since the iPhone, at least. That's what all the buildup says.
The rumor mill is in overdrive.
It is. It is.
From what I've seen. Of course, you know, I guess the consensus is a tablet or slate or whatever the heck you want to call it is probably going to be something they'll announce. And maybe iLife, I'd say, is a good bet. And perhaps some enhancements to the iPhone, maybe, you know, different carriers and perhaps a upgrade to the OS, I think, is the general consensus. So we'll see how you know, accurate the grapevine is on this one.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, you know, from everything that I can see, my feeling on it is that we're going to get something more along the lines of like a Kindle type thing and an iPhone sort of baked together, as opposed to you know, a laptop replacement, right? I mean, that seems to be what things point to, and that to me that would make sense. But I mean, you know, other than what we've all read online, I don't have any, you know, inside info.
The only thing I'll have to say, I was thinking, I couldn't quite wrap my mind around writing an article about this, but I had a number of years ago actually kicked the tires on a couple of tablets. Fujitsu had one, and running Windows XP tablet edition. Fujitsu had one that was a pure tablet, and then Toshiba, I used one of those that was a hybrid tablet, and it had a keyboard. You know, Apple's really going to have to do something pretty darn impressive to impress me, because I did not like using any of these tablets. I felt they were poorly executed. Now, it could just be because it was taking Windows and just saying, oh, we're going to take away the keyboard and add a pen. And that was kind of the approach, and it wasn't the right approach, because it didn't really buy you anything, in my humble opinion. So
no, that's right. I agree with you. But we know Apple's not going to do that. You know, we'll talk a little bit about this. Then we do have to get into all these follow-ups. But
yes.
But you know, my feeling is, and I think I said this, I've done a lot of podcasts in the last week, But I think I said this when I did the OWC radio thing with Tim Robertson, is look, Apple's not on the ropes. They're not in a position where they have to release some great product to save the company. I mean, you know, their earnings today were pretty darn good, right? You know, 41% profit margin. Yeah, I mean, it was crazy, right? So, you know, if they didn't feel like whatever it is they're going to announce on Wednesday, tablet or not, if they didn't feel like it was some killer product, they just leave it, you know, be and not do anything, right? So that there you go.
Yeah, and from what I understand, they've had a tablet-like device in the labs for quite a long time. Mm. Apple, as we know, doesn't just, for the most part, except for things like the Cube and all that, typically doesn't toss things out there just because they can. They make it a compelling experience, as we've seen with the iPod and the iPhone and stuff like that. They study the market, they understand user needs, and when they come up with something, it's a hit. So let's hope they get it right. But that's a Thursday. It is
no Wednesday
or Wednesday. I'm sorry, Wednesday. So we'll see. So but anyways, on to not us telling you what we think, though we may, but you telling us about.
That's right. And we'll start.
You think.
We'll start with Jeff, and we'll see if everything works like it's supposed to, because nothing on my end is working like it's supposed to tonight. So,
hey, John and Dave, it's Jeff from Denver, Colorado. I was just listening to episode 236, and Jim had called in about his, I believe, iMac locking up. I actually had that exact same issue with a MacBook the other week, and it turns out what it was is it came by default with half a gig of RAM, and I upgraded it to 2 gigs. I got a 2 gig stick from Otherworld Computing, and I had left one of the 256 meg sticks in just to give it a little bit more than 2 gigs. And the machine could not handle that much RAM, and every time I would try and wake it up from sleep by reopening the lid or even a reboot, it would crash. I removed the 256 meg stick from it, and the problem magically went away. If you have any questions, you can...
All right. That's interesting. So I think that model iMac can take more than 2 gigs of RAM. I think he could put 2 2-gig sticks in there to get it up to 4. But, John, perhaps it's that the RAM wasn't, the new RAM wasn't compatible with the old RAM, perhaps? Right?
Well, I think what he was doing is... So in general, with all of the Macs that I've seen, especially the ones that take RAM in pairs.
Let's
always
be
to your
fair.
Benefit.
There are no more, other than the Mac Pro, there is nothing that requires or even benefits from RAM in pairs.
I have an article that would, I would beg to differ.
Okay.
I have seen, I'll dig up the article, but it hints at the fact that you get the best memory performance if they're a matched pair. Not saying you can't mix them, but if you do have the exact same chip in the pair of slots, which I think is how most of the machines are set up, whether it be a pro machine that has, you know, maybe 2, 4, 6, 8, I think a lot of them have 4 or 8 slots. I think it's always to your benefit to try to put in chips that are identical in both of the slots. You certainly cannot.
But
if you do, from what I recall, you usually realize maybe, I think it's something, you know, not a biggie, like a 10% performance increase if you have a matched pair of identical RAM chips. He, of course, had 2 different ones. And I'm just wondering if the 256 and the other one, that they were too far, they were too different from one another, that they just got upset. And rather than, you know, the machine telling you this, it just kind of didn't work right. So I'd say if it's at all possible, whenever you do the RAM in any Mac and it has pairs of RAM slots, try to get a matched pair, and I think you're going to eliminate a lot of grief.
I will clarify that. I think on the model iMac that I have and on the MacBook Pros that we have, it doesn't matter. I really don't think that there is any dual channel support or anything, but I do recall seeing something about the new iMacs that are on the i7 and i5 processors, that they do have dual channel access. And with that, you're absolutely right. You'll get that 10, you know, maybe even 15% speed bump. If your RAM is in pairs, that's right.
Yeah. So I'll dig up the article, because I know I've seen it. I know not just Apple, but other vendors really encourage you to try to get the same same chip. So, but it's awesome that he pulled that chip and everything was great. So
Yeah. And when you said that the chips were too far apart in capabilities, you weren't necessarily referring to their capacities as much as you were their speed or their.
Exactly.
There's a couple other ratings on RAM chips, and you need to have those as matched as possible, even if the sizes are different. So.
Okay. But good tip. It does bother me that the machine, rather than pointing this out, saying, whoa, you got some chips here that aren't quite, you know, in sync here. And could you please fix this? It just kind of locked up.
You can see some of that information if you go into System Profiler and go into memory. It will show you the speed and the type of RAM that's in there. And it doesn't show you everything, but it'll give you an idea as to, you know, are you even close on these specs? So.
Right. Like I'm looking, for example, I'm looking at my G5. My G5, I have 8 slots in here. I have 4. They are all the same speed. So in the G5, they're all PC 3200 chips. And then I have a 1 gig, 2 1 gigs, 2 more 1 gigs, 2 512s, and 2 256s. So in this machine, they're all paired up in some fashion. So this machine has 8 slots, which I think is typical of the desktop machines. And everything just runs along happily.
Cool.
I may try just as an experiment to kind of scramble them up a bit and just see if I run into any problems. Just for you, the listener, I'm going to try this.
Yeah, I think the G5 was a machine that definitely benefited from RAM in pairs. The tower machines were.
Oh, well, it also says here, this is interesting too, and I hadn't noticed this until I just brought this up in the profiler, but it has a little status column.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these chips, it says okay. So if you suspect a RAM problem, I'm wondering if it says not okay or
I'm wondering if he looked
in the System Profiler, he would have seen some sort of indication, either seeing that the speeds were different or if the whatever comes up in the status column that is not okay,
right?
If that would have helped him diagnose it, but he diagnosed it.
Yep.
Excellent.
Cool. All right, moving on to a Snow Leopard discussion from a QuickTime discussion from last week.
G'day, John. G'day, Dave. It's Andrew here in San Francisco, following up on an item in Mac Geek Gab 236. It's about QuickTime 7. If you've already got Snow Leopard on your machine and you're missing QuickTime 7 for whatever reason, just put the Snow Leopard DVD into your Mac and choose optional installs, and you will find QuickTime 7 there as an option to install. So you get both QuickTime X and QuickTime 7. The reason I know is that I like listening to internet radio stations from Australia. I can't play those on QuickTime X because of the Windows Media ASX files. It works in QuickTime 7, but not QuickTime X. And also, too, I use Flip for Mac 2.2.3.7. The most recent versions of Flip for Mac don't work for me. So install QuickTime 7 and 2.2.3.7 for Flip for Mac, and you can listen away to your heart's content. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much there, Andrew.
I'm almost positive that, at least on the one machine, on my MacBook Pro, that I don't recall checking that box because I did an upgrade. I did not do a fresh install, so I think if it's already on there, it's gonna toss it if it's not already in the utilities folder. But no, that's a good thing because there's definitely a capability issue between the two of them. I think we touched on it in an earlier show that for example, the QuickTime 7 has some nice things like speed up that are at least readily accessible. But when we were addressing that issue earlier, where you can go to a AV, I think it's the AV control panel or view, and you can speed up a video up to 3 times. I don't know where the heck that is in the QuickTime 10 player or QuickTime player 10.
It's not.
Or I can't find it. It may be in there somewhere, but it's funny how the newer version has less capability, because the concept of Pro Player is kind of gone now, right?
That's gone. Yeah, at least currently. Who knows if they'll come back around? Yeah, I'm not really sure what they've done. I mean, I get the idea that they want to simplify the interface and, you know, make it more streamlined and blah blah blah, whatever. We're going to jump around here, John, on our little, you know, back end agenda. We were talking about this QuickTime thing and talking about speeding up video, and the one thing that we didn't really have an answer for was, can you do it on the iPhone? And the answer is no, you can't do it on the iPhone without some help, although it certainly seems like this is an opportunity for a third party app. But until that exists, we do have one option that many people wrote in about, and Chris was happy enough to explain with an audio comment.
Hey, John and Dave, it's Christopher with MacWorks in Minneapolis. I was listening to your recent show, number 236, where a listener had a question about speeding up video. And I know I just did this the other day with a video that I created. I don't do a lot of video, but I just happened to make one the other day. And iMovie does have a feature for speeding up the video clip. So if the listener already has the videos encoded in a format that iMovie is happy with, you can bring it in there. And then using the clip adjustments options, you can speed up the video there and have some control over how much faster you want the video to play. Hopefully that helps. Thanks, guys. You do a great show, and look forward to more. Take care.
Awesome. And then as, thanks, Chris, as many people pointed out, you can then export from iMovie to iTunes and, you know, boom, you're good to go. It's got the audio file and or the video or whatever it is you want it to be, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I think we're advised that you got to be careful with speed factor you use, and that you don't want to chipmunk, because I guess everything gets sped up, the audio and the video. So you don't want to. Yeah, I think a 3x increase would probably make it pretty much unintelligible, unless right. So I think it was suggested 1.5x is probably a safe balance between increased throughput and you still being able to understand what the heck the person's saying.
You know, now that I think about it, there's a program that I use every now and then, and I will have used it on this show to edit out. We don't typically do any post-production here, but if there's an audio glitch or if we have a little thing that we've got to deal with, I'll edit it out. And we had an issue like that a couple of minutes ago, John. And I use a program called Sound Studio. And that has, I believe that has the ability to change the speed and maintain the pitch. So that would be an interesting thing to try. I'm pretty sure. I know, Sound Edit 16 way back in the day, and I think that'll probably conjure up some memories for some of you, definitely have that ability. And I believe I've mucked with that in Sound Studio as well. So, so that would be another option there now that I think about it.
Cool.
All right. Let's move on to Neil. We were talking about remote shutdowns and shutting down your Mac that was apparently frozen from either another Mac or from your iPhone. And Neil Bernstein has an interesting little tip to add. He says, I'd like to piggyback on a tip. I'll start that again. I'd like to piggyback a tip on one you guys gave us during number 236. Dave talked about remotely shutting down a stuck machine using SSH from another Mac or from an iPhone. I've done both and it works great. One of the things required is the IP address of the machine you want to shut down. That can be a problem since the machine's address can change if you're using DHCP. But the machine's name never changes. And thanks to Bonjour, you can always connect to any Mac on your network by name, even when invoking SSH, by just adding .local. All lowercase, to its name. So if the machine's name is Durham, you can connect to it from within your network as durham.local. This works from any machine that's got Bonjour installed, which includes any Mac, iPhone, or iPod Touch, along with, I think, any Windows machine that's got iTunes installed, since iTunes uses Bonjour for library sharing. Awesome. Thank you, Neil. That's fantastic. And I'm sure that would work. Any
very
thoughts
nice,
on
and
that?
Of course. Well, one thought is that, I did something recently, a gadget this Monday, actually, that if you are wondering about the IP address of a machine, then there is something, is it IP scanner? I believe it's IP scanner that I did a little ditty about, that will probe your local network and tell you the IP addresses of all the interesting things that are on your local network.
That's right. Yeah.
Of course, you got to be careful. Actually, a follow up to that is if you're going to run any sort of scanning tool, and people brought this up in the comments, but I'll mention it again. If you're going to be running a tool that kind of blasts a message out on any network saying, and I actually you know, I shouldn't have done this, but I actually did try to run this in the workplace.
It was,
nobody yelled at me and you know, nobody yelled at me and I ran it. But as soon as I saw like a flood of things coming up, I mean, it was reporting printers and computers and stuff. I stopped it immediately. And again, no one from our IT group, you know, came to my desk and took my Mac away. So, but be careful when you run these scanning tools, or as we suggested, if you ping a broadcast address, be careful because it can be viewed as an attack or just something very unusual. And if you know, especially in an enterprise or an educational environment, if they have any sort of tool that looks for people doing this sort of stupid stuff, then you may get a call saying, "Why did you, you know, why are you probing the network?"
There you go.
So be careful. But no, that's great. Bonjour. And yeah, I think there's also an optional. Sometimes you can install. Yeah, if you choose not to install iTunes for whatever reason on a Windows machine, I believe you can install that. There is just a standalone Bonjour for Windows installer that will give you Bonjour without, you know, all the extra cruft of if for whatever reason you don't want to install iTunes.
That's true. Yep. And you can do it for printer sharing and that sort of thing.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Moving on to Ken, as we were talking about creating a test user account, Ken's got an interesting question.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Ken from Anchorage, Alaska. I was listening to episode 236, and you were talking about the pain and agony of maintaining a pristine user profile to test all things buggy on your Mac. Well, here's a crazy thought, and I don't know if it would work. I assume it would. What if, when things go horribly wrong with your Mac, only then do you create a new pristine user profile? So you don't have to worry about all the apps and, you know, did I install that in this folder or the full, you know, Mac system folder, or, you know, what about all the CRUD that I share with my family and the apps that I put here and there and this other place? Yeah, reduce the stress in your life. So as a problem arises, create a new profile and then test it. And then, you know, whenever you diagnose the problem and the bug goes away, just wax that profile. Nuke and pave. Anyway, love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Take it easy, fellas. Oh, yeah, and say hi to Pilot Pete.
You bet. Yeah, Pilot
Pete. Hi, Pilot Pete.
Yeah, hi, Pete. He's not here tonight.
Is he in he's in Tennessee, I think.
I believe that's where he is. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, he's still at pilot school.
That's right. Yeah.
I think. I like it. I think the suggestion has its pluses and minuses. I actually kind of like it because at the point you're creating the account, all other things being equal, you rather than creating an account when you first get the machine, which could have the possibility of cruft being added to it for whatever reason, I kind of like the idea of creating it as soon as you detect there's a problem. If you see where I'm going with this. I think you should do both. I think as soon as you get your machine, in addition to creating, and I think you and I are in the same camp, Dave, is that, I mean, every machine that I have, when I create an account, it's an admin account. I rarely, though I think you do because you're in a household with multiple users. I personally don't use user accounts. All my accounts, I only have pretty much one account, well, except for my test account. But my main account is an admin account, and then I may have a test account that's a user account.
Yeah, well, So a couple of things. I definitely create the test account as an admin account because I know that I'm going to want.
As a user account.
No. Oh, because, okay. Because, so here's the thing. I like Ken's idea, and for troubleshooting, it's brilliant because, as you said, John, and as Ken said, it creates a pristine environment that you know nothing's been added to because nothing has been added to it. You just made it. However, the other reason for creating a test account is if you can't get into your main user account, and at that point, if you can't get into it, there's no way to create a new one, right? So that's why I think, we both recommend doing both. And it's also for that reason that my test account that I create when I first get a machine is an admin account because I want the ability to have full access to everything in the event that I can't get into my main user account. I want to just be able to log in and I'm good to go. And yeah, you know, you can authenticate the account using other credentials, but suppose something's happened to those credentials and that's why you can't get in the first place. You know, I like that second set of admin credentials on the machine without question. So,
but you know, to build on that.
Yeah.
Why the heck not create a and we're calling it, when we say test account, we mean an account that you're probably not using unless bad things happen.
Right.
Why not create a user account and an admin account?
Yeah, you could. Sure.
I see no reason. Yeah,
they
not.
Don't. They don't take up that much space. I mean, unless you add documents, which, of course, the whole point is
right.
not to. So, yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. There you go. There you go.
Thanks, Ken.
Yeah. All right. Cool. We'll go to Jeff and then we'll move into. Well, we'll see where this goes.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Jeff from New York. I'm calling about a structural question on the show. Frequently people say, this is where you cut me off, when they leave you something with voice. And I'm sure that's because they want to protect their privacy and you want to protect it too. But probably, I'm guessing, you do not get back to them individually. It would just take too much time and you ask us to call in for the show. So if this is the case, it probably would be beneficial if you told everyone. Never have to leave us that information. We can't be a free tech support service for you. But we love discussing the questions on the show. So, hope to hear the answer, and this is where you cut me off, because I'm done talking. Take care.
Thank you, Jeff. So, yeah, you know, we can't guarantee to be free tech support for everyone. That's definitely true. However, we do try to answer most questions that come in, if possible. Because if we have time, we like to do it. And B, it does help us flesh things out for the show. And sometimes I'll read a question and think, oh, no, we're not going to talk about this on the show. But I know the answer, so I'm going to reply to this person anyway. And I'll reply, and it's in the process of replying that I realize, oh, you know what? This actually, this is a wide enough, you know, casts a wide enough net. We should talk about this. So that's one reason. The other reason is sometimes we'll get a question and we'll have no idea, or we'll have a question of our own to say, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about there? Or did you try this? Or what's this look like? And then we'll take that information and fold it in to the question that we then present here on the show. So we do like to have that contact info, and this is where you cut me off thing seems to be working for all of us here. So I'm okay with it. I think, John, you're okay with it if all of you are.
I'm cool.
All right. Speaking of contacting us, John, it's time to tell everyone how all these follow-ups and tips and, you know, all this other stuff, all these reactions come in. It's time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's time. And we don't have a jingle for this or anything, so it's just up to us. We got to lead right into it, John. One of these days you'll catch my pitch there. All right, so.
Yeah, I got your pitch. Okay, if you want to get in touch with us. The thing that we love, despite the audio file name collision thing, which we may talk about a little bit later, but audio comments are, I think, always the preferred method. If you can get us an audio comment, recorded on your iPhone, your iPod Touch, on your Mac using whatever sound recording utility. And you can send it to us, attach it to an email. And what's the email? Gosh, Dave.
The email address is feedback@macgeekgab.com.
Now, I think I heard you right, Dave, is you said feedback@macgeekgab.com. But I think there's a, well, yeah, that's the main address.
That is the main address. Oh, that's right. And if you want to send a comment into the premium show, it's premium@macgeekgab.com. We read them
did
all.
Did you say premium@macgeekgab.com?
I did. I did. Premium@macgeekgab.com. Sure. We do. Feedback@ and premium@. We read them all. It does help us know who's what and keep things straight. I don't know. We see everything that comes in. So,
and even premium, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Yeah. Skype to Mac Geek Gab, that still works. At least.
Yep. And you know, there's this thing called the telephone. You know, actually, I've been strongly considering in these trying economic times, maybe economizing, because I still have, you may be shocked, Dave, but I still have a landline. An old copper wire landline.
Yeah, we gave up
AT&T.
our landline, but we have two Vonage lines that effectively serve that purpose, and we've been considering giving those up too, and just moving to AT&T. So, for those of you that are iPhone customers, AT&T now has a $99 a month flat rate, unlimited voice and data, plan for the iPhone. That's for a single iPhone. If you've got two iPhones on a family plan, it actually, you save $10 a phone. It's $179. So, you know, it's there's some possibility in there. We've been talking about getting rid of the landline here, too. Or the Vonage line. Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking about it, too, because the cable service here, which is Cablevision or Optimo Online, they do have this triple play thing, which I find the commercials incredibly annoying. Sorry, guys. Just cut it out. But no, they hinted at the fact that because I already have my cable service with them and my television service with them, so both my cable modem and my cable TV, they hinted at the fact that I could add on telephone for quite a bit less than my landline copper phone. So I'm wary because of these, you know, limited deals and you know, the combo deals that expire after a year. And I hate that stuff. It's just tell me how much extra you want. And so I got to explore that further. But if you did want to pick up a telephone, whether it be a cell phone or a landline phone or, you know, Skype phone or whatever, I think, Dave, what you do is you dial 206-666-GEEK, which is
4335. That's 206-666-4335. But wait, there's less. Actually, that's it. All right, moving on. You know, we talked about a very interesting problem that Joe was having a few shows ago where he was unable to change the printing defaults. And we sent Joe in to he was having a problem where it was always printing in landscape mode and he wanted to go back to portrait. And he couldn't figure it out. And this was in Apple Mail.
And it was, I think it was reducing it by 75%.
Oh,
even
that
weirder.
Too. It was doing both.
It was scaling it and rotating it, which I assume is not what he wanted. So it was like, where the heck was it getting this info, Dave?
Right. So we sent Joe to Home Library Preferences and pointed him to a file called com.apple.mail.plist. And so Joe took that and ran with it. Now, that did not fix the issue. Looking in that file, there was nothing in there. Deleting that file, there was nothing in there. However, he took that and ran with it and actually wound up talking, I believe, to AppleCare. I'll read what Joe had to say. He said, turns out there is a plist printing file that apparently all Apple apps use. It is Home Library Preferences, com.apple.print.printingprefs.plist. A lot of P's in there. It's in the location you mentioned, yep, but not related to mail, which was my issue. Well, it turned out that when I tried printing in Safari, I normally use Firefox, I had the same defaults. So that suggested a common Apple resource file that was used for printing and hence the eventual file found. In that plist file are the rows extracted for the orientation and the scaling, which was also defaulting to 75%. And sure enough, he shows the two lines in this plist. I will admit that after figuring out the issue, it was ultimately AppleCare that helped me find the actual file. A little bit of extra brain power never hurts. So that is the file. If you want to alter your defaults for printing system-wide for your Apple written apps, that's the place you go. I guess it's possible a third party could tap into this. And perhaps it was a third party that wrote to this. Joe was trying to figure out, and I don't think we have an answer for this, so we'll throw it out as a geek challenge. Do you have an answer for this? How it got changed? Okay, all right. Well, cool.
I think I may.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how it got changed, but I do believe, I'm looking right now at a print dialog in TextEdit, but if you look at the print dialog, so of course the first item is a printer, but then the second item is something called presets. And what I see right now is it's set to something called standard. But then there are also, it also has an entry, last use settings, and it also has a save as. And I'm wondering if at some point in time somebody went into presets and perhaps fiddled with the print settings and they somehow got saved as the standard configuration. I'll have to dig with this more because I typically don't. I just take whatever the print dialog gives me, and if I want to change something like the orientation or the scaling or whatever, I'll just change that on the fly. I will not lock it in as one of these presets. So I'm suspecting that the presets area may be where, for whatever reason, someone dove in there at some point in time, either him or another user, and said, oh, you know, I love these settings. You know, landscape and 75% is what I want to do all the time. and it's somehow saved it. So I would encourage him to look in the presets area and see if there's anything there that looks unusual. If there are any presets in there, if there are, I don't have any myself. I don't know about you if you're checking your system.
I am, and somehow I've locked up mail, so now I'm really worried because, you know, I'm recording the show on this machine, et cetera, et cetera. But I was going to go and make a new preset and see if it updated that preferences file. So I'm looking here. Yeah, why not? Let's change this to 75%. And this is live geekdom here for you folks. All right, so it's no, can't be 7,000%. What is going on with my computer here? This is not the thing to mess with when you're doing a podcast, by the way, folks.
No. So why don't we just say the presets is an area that you may want to explore if your printing is doing consistently.
No, it's not, because I saved a new preset, and it saved it in com.apple.print.custompresets.plist.
Ooh.
Yeah.
How do you know this, Dave? Well, I know, but you tell us.
Yeah, good question. So what I did was I opened up the home library preferences folder and I sorted it by date modified. And then I went and started mucking about in the aforementioned mail system print dialog. And immediately I saw that window update and this file floated right to the top. So I think it's a safe assumption that since I was messing with custom print presets, it's entirely possible that that's where that goes. So,
okay. And that's something I got to explore because I honestly have, I just saw it there. I see it's a menu choice and I see it has, well, it says standard, mine right now says standard and last use settings. But then as you pointed out, it's a different plist file. So we'll muck around with presets.
Now here's something interesting. I chose to print with that, and then another file floated to the top, com.apple.print.printerproxy.plist. Again, more P's and R's and all that fun stuff. But that's yet another file, and now I'm on last use settings, and if I muck around with that, I don't think it's going to make a difference. No. So
Okay. I got to say, Dave, I'm really excited because remember I was talking about you know, my old HP DeskJet 990 CSE.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this. I tweeted about it a bit, but a friend of mine clued me in that HP had like this amazing deal. So I actually have on the way, I think it's coming Wednesday, HP photo printer, a B8550 that'll print 13 by 19.
Dude.
And part of the deal was, so it's a cool photo printer. It has like a little display. You can put in memory cards. But it was normally a $300 printer. They just stopped this though. You know, it's too late now to get a deal on it, but it was $300. They had a $150 instant rebate. And then they had a, $50, trade in if you traded in your old printer, which I happen to have.
Sure. Mine. Of course. Yes.
The old one. So the price of it was great. And also the ink is a lot cheaper because this, the printer I have now is, as you know, has the COIM cartridge. It has a black cartridge and a COIM cartridge, and the COIM cartridge in this thing is really relatively expensive. This new printer has a C, a Y, an M, and then a photo black and a black cartridge, and they're like $10 each or maybe a little. So it looks like a really, really nice. So I have a new baby coming and, you know, I may do a mini review, but
awesome.
You know, I figure every 10 years, you know, it's about time to get a new photo printer.
Yeah. You going to order a tablet on Wednesday, John?
No. Well, unless I think I need one.
Yeah. You need one.
I don't think I need one.
No, maybe not. All right, let's see.
Anyways, moving on, but I'm excited to get a new HP printer, and it is advertised as compatible with Leopard, whereas Snow Leopard, whereas, of course, this one, as you recall, they said, sorry, Charlie, we're not writing a new driver for you.
That's right. All right, let's talk to Phil. We talked about a machine that wouldn't go to sleep, and we suggested some things, and Phil has some kind of piggyback ideas for that.
Hey, John and Dave. Phil Morris here from the heart of North Carolina. On Mac Geek Gab number 236, you discussed an issue about not getting your screen to blank and stay black through the night. I recently had this issue, and I found two things that corrected the problem. I'm using a Bluetooth Mighty Mouse, and I found that if the tracking sensitivity is on either the last or the second to last tick mark, walking through the room will be enough to unblank the screen. It's possible that even the airflow from my ceiling fan is enough. The second thing, and probably the easiest to miss, is if you have any video playback application open like QuickTime or VLC, these tend to naturally turn off the screensaver modes while they are in the foreground, and sometimes even if they're just open. So if you make sure you shut down those applications before attempting to blank the screen, that will ensure your screen doesn't have an application trying to keep it on. I hope these tips help.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Phil. That's good stuff.
Awesome. And I think these are encompassed. So there is an article, Dave.
Yes.
In the Apple Knowledge Base, HT1776. The title of the article is macOS 10, Why Your Mac Might Not Sleep or Stay in Sleep Mode. And he definitely nailed it here, I think, as far as one of the reasons, because if you dig into this article, that they have a section saying some things reset the sleep timers, preventing the computer from sleeping. And one of them is moving the mouse or using a portable Mac's trackpad, pressing a mouse button, or pressing a key on the keyboard. There are several other things. We'll link to this article. But there are a number of things that can reset these sleep timers to make it so that your Mac never goes to sleep.
Cool. All right. That's great, man. Yeah, that's I was just thinking the show notes for this show are going to be chock full of goodness. It just, it can't go any other way.
I think so. I mean, they are.
All right. Let's talk about Brad. We had a kind of recurring conversation about battery life recently. And Brad had an interesting little anecdote to share. He says, just caught up on my episodes after being in Jamaica for a bit. Yeah, sure, Brad, rub it in. And I thought I would tell you my battery story. I remember you guys saying something about 300 cycles being a limit of some kind on Mac batteries. And as an aside, it is. It's the point at which Apple gives up on warrantying your battery, even if it's under Apple Care. That's for the removable batteries. For the built-in, kind of baked-in batteries, it's 1,000 cycles. So, well, I just looked at the battery health monitor, and my cycle count is at 150% or about 598 charge cycles. My MacBook is only about a year and a half to 2 years old, but I constantly take it everywhere with me, so I am on battery quite a bit. The interesting part of the info I get from Battery Health Monitor is that it says my current capacity is 200 milliamp hours larger than the original capacity. I guess I got the one really good battery out of the batch. Anyway, just thought I would share it with you. Keep up the good work, etc. Thank you, Brad. This lends credence, John, to my theory that cycling the battery more, rather than doing what I do and leaving it charged on the bench and charging all of the time, is actually very, very good for the battery. And so I've increased my schedule, and now every 2 weeks, whether I need to or not, and I probably need to, I cycle my battery on my MacBook Pro.
So, yeah, that just doesn't sound right. From what I understand, most of the batteries, if they hit 300, they'll kind of yell at you saying, you know, I'm done, man. You charged me. But apparently the Mac doesn't strictly enforce that if he's getting 598.
And 200 milliamp hour more power than he got, or then it's not, to be clear, Battery Health Monitor reports what it believes to be the original maximum capacity of a battery. It's almost always going to be incorrect for your battery, either by, you know, by a couple hundred milliamp hours on one side or another. I mean, mine says 5,500 milliamp hours. Well, my battery came and it was like 5,312. And it's like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. You know, but perhaps, yep, Brad's came and it was a little higher and it stayed there, which is cool. So,
yep. Well, I had that happen because it was, as you recall,
yeah,
I did ship, you know, I did call Apple Care, and but because Snow Leopard said my batteries were shot, or it said, you know, in the battery menu, it said, you know, service battery. And I'm like, huh, well, that's weird. So I called Apple and they shipped me two new batteries. And just looking right here, original capacity, which, you know, I think I'm with you, is that that's a kind of accepted value for this type of battery. And it's 5,500, as you pointed out. The right current capacity, which doesn't make me too sad, is 5,421. Okay, I'm cool with that. The current charge, which is weird because it says 100%, is 5,398. So it's funny because I've cycled this battery a couple of times and I've brought it. And as Apple recommends, and we'll link to this article as well, Apple recommends that what you do is you do a calibration where you charge the battery. I believe the process is you charge the battery up to full. You leave it there for a couple hours. Then you totally deplete it and then let it sit for, I think, about 5 hours. And right, it should calibrate the battery. Now, what strikes me as weird is that it's not quite at the maximum capacity of this battery.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, it's close. I mean, it's certainly more than before, because before the battery was starting to, you know, drain. And I think the capacity was in the 4,000s or maybe even the 3,000s.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's definitely in a nicer range. And I'm very happy that they gave me the new batteries. But I'm, the numbers I'm seeing are kind of weird. But they're in the 99 to 100% range. So I'm happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's not going to be perfect. The circuitry in there, you're dealing with chemicals that are reacting in ways to power. And, you know, it's like the, it's kind of like the Borg ship or something, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's own little entity in there.
What?
You can't mess with it. I don't know. Don't listen to me.
I don't know what it's Borg-like, but.
Let's listen to Brett. Go.
Hey guys, this is Brett from Appleton again. I don't know why I feel compelled to respond repeatedly to show 234, but I had an interesting battery story maybe you'd want to share, and that was that with an original MacBook Pro, and I've already given the punchline here, but the symptom that I had was that the button for the trackpad stopped working. It no longer, you could no longer feel the mechanical click there. And, of course, Google knew the answer. When I Googled MacBook, you know, trackpad button not working, it said something about bad battery. Check the batteries expanding. And sure enough, the battery is located right underneath the trackpad in that model. And the battery expanded to the point where the trackpad button could no longer be pushed down. Anyway, under AppleCare, you know, they quickly replaced the battery and all was good in the end. So, thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Awesome. Thanks, Brett.
That's really bad, man. To me, a battery physically bulging, that's...
Yeah, well,
that's
we
almost
talk-
as bad as it, like, leaking acid or something. That's just bad. But yeah, no, he's right. It's right next to the button, so on certain models.
Yeah. It's the way it goes. All right.
I guess every now and then you may want to just, you know, like, I actually now, I regularly rotate. Every couple of charge cycles, I'll rotate between the two batteries I have now. I always, and I don't know about you, Dave, but I always have, we have the same model. Of course, you can't do this with the newer Macs because you can't take the battery out. But I always, and I would recommend this on any Mac, portable Mac that you use, you know, with a removable battery, is I would rotate among your batteries frequently, every couple of times. So if there's something like this where it's bulging or doing something weird or leaking or whatever.
That's a good point. You'll see it.
You can see it. Before, I didn't used to do this. I used to pretty much leave the battery in there for months and months on end and then switch in the other one. But now I'm more prone to swap them out every couple of charge cycles. Again, just to keep them balanced. And also, you know, if there's something weird going on with the battery that I'll notice it, like bulging, but I've never seen that. That is kind of scary.
Yeah. That's a good point to keep them balanced, because it is important to keep a battery in use. Yeah, that's good. I only have one battery that I use regularly in my machine. So, you know, it stays in there. I have one of those spec, you know, specproducts.com makes those Lucite plastic, kind of clear plastic colored covers. And so I have a green one on my MacBook Pro and I never take it off. So, I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but you know, I never take
it off.
Taking it off? Well, and not taking the battery out. It just stays in all the time. But I think I'd probably know if it was bulging, because that cover wouldn't fit anymore. So,
and I think a little mini tangent, then we'll move on. But I think we touched upon this, is that there is a chance. Another reason that you want to rotate batteries is that I think we talked about this, and I think this is still the case. A battery, maybe not with the newer Apple batteries, but some of the older batteries, we did find an article that a battery can be depleted so far that it is totally dead to anything.
Yep.
And that it will get to the point where it is so depleted that even if you charge it, it's shot. I don't know if it's a little chip in there that tells the battery, you know, maximum, minimum, but don't let a battery sit around forever, because it can certainly get to the point where you will never revive it again. So keep exercise your batteries, I think, is the moral of the story here.
Yeah. Now here's something, and I've seen this mentioned with enough other batteries that I have begun to believe and certainly act in this way, like it's true for Mac batteries. But if you're going to leave a battery on the bench or on the shelf, i.e. not in a computer, not charging, not discharging, the best state to start with is about a 60% charge. Everything that I've seen about, and this is very anecdotal, but it's very consistent. You know, anytime I get batteries from, you know, these, and these are the lithium ion batteries, right? You know, anytime I get a device where they say, you know, charge the battery, but if you're not going to use it, don't charge it all the way up, you know, get it down a little bit. So you're not sitting at 100%. Yeah. And I don't know, you know, I'm sharing this without all the information. I don't know why that is. I mean, it seems that, you know, if you have it fully charged, maybe there's, you know, the Borg energy inside there is too much and it's going to, you know, cause issues. I don't know, you know, but yeah, they say leave it at 60%. Then, you know, when you're going to use it, charge it up and run off and use it. So I don't know why. I don't know what this Borg thing is. I don't know where that's
from. But Dave, I would tend, you know, if I had to associate the Borg with any computer, I certainly wouldn't associate them with the Mac. I don't know.
I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know what, I haven't been watching Star Trek. I'm not sure where that's coming from, but we're just going to go with it. So,
right.
Because what else are we going to do? We're not going to go and edit the show. Safari. We talked about someone having tab problems, and I believe Mr. X, but not the Mr. X, has a solution. And this is a good solution in general for a lot of wacky things I've seen in Safari.
Hi. I was just listening to 228, hearing about the guy with the Safari problem and everything with the incorrectly colored tabs. If you uninstall Flash and then reinstall Flash, it should work, Adobe Flash, that is. And I've had this issue actually twice, so thanks. All right, bye.
Cool. So, yeah, going in and uninstalling and reinstalling Flash, in theory, fixes this. And that's not a bad thing because new versions of Adobe Flash do come out pretty regularly. And you won't necessarily be notified of this unless you visit a Flash-based site that requires something in the new version. And then it'll say, hey, you know, your Flash is out of date. You need to update. But other, and I just got one of those messages the other day. But otherwise, you may not know that there's a version. And of course, being geeks, we like to always have the latest version because if we're not living on the bleeding edge, well, you know, where are we living?
Yeah, because, I mean, if your system's working fine and then all of a sudden you get all these software updates, I mean, you immediately want to apply them because then you introduce a, you know, sense of randomness and uncertainty.
Blindly and immediately. That's right, John. That's right.
Now, my question is, now, I haven't actually run the Flash thing. You know, when he's saying uninstall Flash, I assume, well, is there an... and this is, you know, a thing that's lacking, I think, in some Mac installers is that there's an install, but there's not an uninstall. I haven't looked recently to see if Flash, if you run the installer, it has an uninstall button kick around somewhere, or if you have to muck around in the dirt and rip out all the pieces of Flash before you install a new version.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Or so, just run the latest installer and it kind of takes care of that for you.
Well, there is a tech note on Adobe.com that talks about uninstalling the Adobe Flash Player plugin on Windows and the Mac. So... and there's a disk image that you've got to download that has the Flash uninstaller. So again, the show notes for this show are going to be chock full of loving link goodness. And I believe that gets us to where we can head out. Although, I will say that the sponsor for this show, John, is us with our Mac Geek Gab Premium. $25, 6 months. 2 extra episodes per month, plus access to the full archives, and you get the warm, loving feeling of adding a little bit of support back to John and I as well. So we definitely appreciate all of you who have signed up. It's been fantastic, going very well, and obviously we're happy to do the sponsored shows for everybody. That's not going to change either. So
yeah, and to clarify, premium does not mean it's better. It means more.
You got it.
And we'll have to rethink that, but it's just more content. The show notes are always freely available.
You got it.
Even if you aren't a subscriber, you can glance at the show notes and get a gist for what's in the premium show. We want to give you a little taste before you sign up.
That's right. Macworld Expo is coming up, John, February 9th through 13th. The exhibits are 11th through 13th. We're doing a show on the show floor.
What are we going to talk about?
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing.
Because the show floor opens up at noon, I think, on the 11th, correct?
Yeah, we're not going to have seen the show floor. So, John, yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. What in the heck are we going to talk about? So, first and foremost, all of you that are coming to the show, come to the live show and bring your questions. We're going to play, you know, Stump the Geeks Live, definitely. That said, there are things that John and I, you know, we get all these press releases ahead of time about companies that are exhibiting at Macworld. And it's there's a lot of people that are going to be at this show. It's probably going to be over 250 companies exhibiting, right? We're going to get lots of press releases. We're going to look through those. And there's going to be a couple things that we see that we're like, oh, dude, we definitely have to see that. Now, there's also the other things that we're going to stumble on at the show. Obviously, we can't talk about the ones that we're going to stumble on because we won't have stumbled yet. At least not upon those booths. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can give you an idea of, all right, cool, you know, check this thing out. Go check this thing out. We're going to do it, too. And then we'll talk about it later in the week. So that's how that show's going to go. So we're going to talk about that stuff. We'll probably prep some tips and things just in case, you know, you folks don't have any questions. But I'm sure hoping that you do.
Well, if you're not at the show. So I think we'll give, precedence to questions from the people that are actually there.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, you know, actually, no, we'll draw Dave, we have way, way more. I mean,
way more people listen to the feed than will be in the audience. But
what I'm saying is that we have way more questions than we could ever possibly get to. We try to focus on, you know, topics that are of general interest and multiple people write in about. So I think we may dig into the email archives and bring a few out. If the folks on the floor don't speak up, which based on what I've seen, they certainly
love to
try, especially when it's Stump the Geek.
It's 1 hour, 12:30 to 1:30 p.m., 30 minutes after the show floor opens on Thursday, February 11th. Now, that night, also Thursday, February 11th, because that's how it works, at 8 p.m. is Cirque du Mac. You folks have heard us mention that there are tickets available. We have a contest going at Mac Observer. But, you know, for you folks, the listeners to the show, and since I'm the guy that puts in all the work to actually pull the show together, pull the Cirque du Mac together, mm-hmm. you know, I like to throw extra tickets to our Mac Geek Gab listeners. And so mm-hmm. there is a secret link. Many of you have already used it. And those of you who have already used it, at least as of this afternoon, we approved all of them. I can't guarantee that we'll be able to do that all the way through because we are going to run out of room at this thing. But you know, the sooner you get in, the better, because I'll go in and check that queue. And if I see a bunch of requests, you know, it's like, is there room? Yeah. All right, fine. Just approve everybody. It's fine. So thus far, it's been a good thing if you signed up on that list. But sign up for the contest, too. It never, never hurts. I actually do want to thank our sponsors for Cirque du Mac 7, and they are Circus Ponies, Ecelerate, Microsoft, Project Wizards, Verbatim, and Smile on My Mac, in no particular order.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a lineup.
This party's going to be rocking, man. It's going to be so cool. I'm so looking forward to it. Yeah.
And bring a camera, bring a video camera. Yeah. There's always shenanigans that eventually get out on the internet, and I think it's been recognized as one of the,
iPhone.
One of the highlights of Macworld. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. No, it is one of the highlights of Mac, definitely. iPhoneAlley.com is Michael Johnston's home when he's not converting this show for you. CacheFly provides all the bandwidth, CacheFly.com. The podcast marketplace includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo from Barebone Software, PDF Pen from Smile on My Mac, Notebook from Circus Ponies, and of course, Mac Geek Gab Premium from us. And that's it. It's time to go and watch all that Monday night television we've come to know and love, John. Because we're Americans.
Heroes.
That's what we do.
Yeah, Heroes coming up, right?
I don't watch Heroes. We've been watching 24 and House and I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Big Bang Theory,
24.
Of course. Yeah.
24, you're running out of time. Now, you know, the thing was, Dave, at last year's party, I think somebody caught me on film cutting the rug there, and I did get caught.
Made up.